Right side, LeBanc feeds back to the left and a shot, and they score! And the Sharks win it in overtime. Power play goal wins it for San Jose.
Big faceoff win by Tommy Hurdle. Burnsy did a good job getting the middle of the ice where you want to work the power play from, and Kevin LeBanc made a heck of a pass. I didn't think he was going to dish it over there. He even surprised me a little bit and caught it, saw a lot of net and shot it.
When the goal got called back and then, late in the first overtime, how much juice did that give you guys going forward?
Yeah, a little bit. I think right away when we saw Joner react like he did, he doesn't really react after goals, and he was pretty upset after that one. So I was pretty confident that it was going to get called back. I went over to where the replays are, the NBC guy, and I saw that their guy made contact in the crease. So I think a lot of us knew that it wasn't going to count.
Logan Couture scores the game winner in double overtime, man. Wow. Is all I can say for all of us that were there, all of us that were listening, all of us that were watching one hell of a hockey game. Maybe not the ending we were all hoping for, Vegas Golden Knights-wise, but it was what it was. Hey, here we go on a Sunday morning. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman. To my right on your radio dial, Jose Valonte is going to chime in right now. In a few minutes, we're going to get him on here. He's got a few things to say. I don't want to toot my own horn, so I'm going to let him do it for me. Also, behind the big board, always taking care of things, a guy that you hear regularly on Vegas Golden Knights Radio, produces a lot of shows here. You'll hear him produce the T.C. Martin Show daily right here on Fox Sports Radio. He'll also be involved with, obviously, the Vegas Golden Knights Insider and a lot of other shows, man. Chris Chapman, known as Magnum to all of his good friends here in Lotus Broadcasting. We love the guy. And, of course, joining the show a little bit later on. Some other people will talk about that in a minute. But listen, without you, there's no show. And I want you to know, first of all, to follow us social media-wise, Out of Line, which is OUTTALINE. We got a Facebook page at Out of Line 1340 AM if you want to check out that is the Twitter page, the Twitter handle, right?
Yes.
And also, Jose, man, talk about real quickly for your website, your podcast, man. Let them know.
Yeah, so I have a podcast called Straight Best Sports, for those of you that don't know. I have my website up and running. Don't have the domain name yet, but we're working on that. But if you guys want to check out any of my stuff, I am on Twitter, Jose_Valonte. If not, just look for Straight Best Sports. You'll find all my podcasts on there. And hopefully you guys follow, listen, share, and we'll go from there. Thanks,
man,
Brian.
Man, my pleasure, man. We're on Facebook, also live, Jose's page, my page. I think Alan Snell might be running it. We share it with Magnum's page after the show.
All over the place.
We put it up on at Out of Line, Out of Line page as well. So definitely check it out, man. Different side of it, seeing us here in the morning. I don't know that I'd want to watch it, but hey, you got an opportunity to do that as well. And again, without you, there is no show. So by all means, man, if you feel like chiming in, give us a call. The studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. It is a great place to check out every game. Joining the show today, we're going to have Alan Snell again talking about ticket prices, man. You might want to listen to this. Pretty cool. Alan Snell, of course, the founder and the only contributing writer to LVSportsBiz.com, 50,000-plus subscribers strong. I suggest you become one as well. It's the business side of sports. It's really cool. We're going to definitely squeeze Jim Gemma in here today. We got to do our 51s report. We did it last week, but we want Jim to join us. They got a quick stint in town from tomorrow through Thursday, and then they go back on the road again. So you got all the game when they're in town. Thursday, before they check out, you'll get a chance for a dollar beer night, and actually Thursday would be an in-between game for the Golden Knights, so a good night to put on your calendar right now to check out them. We'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. We've got some interviews, all kinds of them today. You just heard, I got a chance to talk to Logan Couture after the game. Talked to a lot of Golden Knights, too, over the past two games. You'll hear from Riley Smith. You will hear from Jonathan Marchessault. You'll hear from, who else do we talk to? I know Magnum talked to Nate Schultz, which will be pretty good. Late Schmidt, I'm sorry, brother. My bad, but that guy has one of the best personalities, and even yesterday he kept his head up. You could definitely tell he was a little bit perturbed. He scored the game equalizer, and everyone thought from that point forward we were definitely going to win the game. It didn't quite work out. And also Pierre-Edouard Belmar as well is going to chime in too, talking about the penalties. We got a chance to talk to him about that. But again, What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in beer, the hard stuff, all the good things at Bubby's University. And you can do that 24 hours a day because they never do close. Again, Bubby's University is located at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. You can go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information. And I'll tell you what, I did get a chance to talk to Pierre Edouard Belmar yesterday about the penalties right after the game. And
hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
What it showed in, I think, 3, 4, and 5, when we play 5-on-5, that we started to take over a little bit. So obviously for us, it's going to be important to stay 5-on-5. But, I mean, 4-on-4, we're a good team too, so that's the way it is.
What do you say to clean it up with the penalties going forward? Because that's just uncharacteristic of you guys to have that many penalties.
Like you said, it's uncharacteristic. So we just have to keep doing what we do. And we know we made mistakes tonight. Just move on. There's nothing you can do about that game. That game is gone. So make sure that we learn from our mistake. And that next game, we stay a little bit more disciplined.
You know, he's 100% right. They've got to stay more disciplined. The Turk yesterday, you know, we're not going to play any of the sound from him. He just really, really upset. You don't see him that upset. I mean, you know, when Shang Peng asked him a question, he literally said, next question. I don't usually see him do that, Chris. That's about as angry as you probably ever see the Turk get.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, too, I was going to ask that question.
I didn't think it was a bad question.
Right before Shang. So, in a way, I'm kind of glad that...
he was the martyr?
That he took the bullet for us, you know, because I thought it was a question that needed to be asked. And, you know, I talked to Shang a little bit, and, you know, I'm not sure why the vitriol toward Shang, but I think maybe it was just a combination of maybe he didn't like some of the questions before, and maybe he thought that, you know, Shang was trying to throw his guy under the bus, but I didn't take it that way. I kind of feel like it was the responsibility of the media to ask that question. You know, look, you made the challenge on that goal. What did you see? Because when we saw the replay, I thought, you know, I thought it was one of those situations where the goal was going to stand, because I thought that Miller did kind of make contact with Meyer, but the thing is, there was a game earlier in the season, and I wish I remember which game it was, but he challenged a goal like that, and it was
waved off.
No, it was withheld, or they ruled it a goal, and I asked him the question in the press conference, and you know, I basically worded it, you know, did you see something there, or were you just kind of throwing it out there to see maybe if you can get it, you know, maybe an opportunity to you know, get these guys back on track and focus on what's going on, because that was the third goal. They had just given up 3 straight goals. So I asked him the question earlier in the year, and he answered it, and he basically said that it was a situation where they were just trying to throw something out there to see what would happen, but it was also an opportunity to talk to the team and try to calm them down a little bit. And you notice they played a lot better after that.
Well, no question about it. It is it's almost a free timeout when you challenge something, because they have to take the time to look at the instant replay. And, you know, the one thing that has been, obviously, as we get into this, the controversy has been the goaltender interference, Chris and Jose. And I've looked into this last night. One of the things I did when I got home was really did some due diligence on this. Of course, they showed the replay in super slow-mo, which Magnum told me after the game, in super slow-mo, when you look at it, you would see that Jonesy's skates were still in the goal crease or in the blue area. His stick was outside of it, but what I've learned...
Well, what I saw was, from a still photo, his skate was on the red line between the blue paint and the clear ice.
Which is still considered the goal crease.
I don't know exactly, but his stick, which is what they're... His stick and blocker, which is what they're saying that Marchessault made contact with, they were outside the crease, and that's the skater's area. That's not the goalie's area. So my issue is, I don't mind that they didn't call it a goal. I think that's fine. My issue is, was it conclusive enough to overturn it? Because I'm on Twitter last night, And I see former referees, and I see a former goalie, Guy Hebert. People may remember him. He was a goalie in the NHL. He is now a member of the Anaheim Ducks broadcast team. He felt it was a bad call.
It should have stood.
He said, I basically someone had said, you know, it was, I think it was a former ref. And there was another goalie I saw, Brent Johnson, I think his name was. He also said on Twitter he thought it was a bad call.
See, now, and on ESPN last night, Barry Melrose, and he was backed up by Scott Van Pelt, said immediately, he's like, wow, you said right off the get-go it was a bad, it was going to be called, it was going to be called back.
But that's just it.
Well, here's the thing.
How do you have multiple people in the media and former players and a former ref who can't agree?
No, I agree.
So my
issue. It's not conclusive enough.
That's exactly it, you know, and I understand that replay is generated from Toronto. It wasn't a challenge by Peter DeBoer, who pretty emphatically last night said, oh, it was the right call. It was in the spirit of game. I mean, of course, what else is he going to say?
What's he going to say?
But here's the thing. I don't think it was in the spirit of the rule because I think once you put your equipment outside the crease, unless it's blatant, and it clearly wasn't blatant on Marchessault to hit that, you know, he had the defender right on him. It's not like he had a lot of room to get around. But once you put your equipment outside the crease, you're fair game. Unless it's intentional, in which case, if it's intentional, then it's a penalty. So I don't understand how you could take the goal off the board by saying it was conclusive, but then not call a penalty because what you're saying is Marchessault impeded with the ability of the goalie.
Where's the goaltender
to make a
interference?
Play. So you can't take the goal off the board
and then not call a penalty. I'm not going to disagree with you. Listen,
I think it was a bad call.
The goalkeeper obviously can go outside the blue area, which is also known as the goal crease, to make a save. The bottom line is withheld the puck. In this case, Marchessault cannot touch the goaltender. Okay, it's just that simple. He can't impede his ability to stop the puck, and Marchessault came from behind Jones and hit his stick and in turn impeded his progress.
That's the other thing,
That's
though.
What they said.
That's what they
and,
say.
And again, I don't think he intentionally hit the stick, but he still hit the stick. He was in the blue area, and because of that, it is considered interference, or it is considered impeding him. Like Chris said, how then do you not consider that goaltender interference if you are going to take a goal off the board? That was my part. I think it was a crappy rule. And here's my biggest issue. And this is what, you know, I didn't have any arguments with this last night. I talked to a buddy from Michigan after the game late last night. And we were talking about it. I said, listen, man, that disallowed goal could be a turning point in this series. And let's all face that right now. It's 2-0. Going on the road, holding home ice advantage. And
should
all of
noticed,
a sudden,
San Jose never has, in their history, has never overcome a 2-0 series deficit.
That I didn't know, but here's the deal. All of a sudden, it's 1-1, and San Jose doesn't have to win another game at T-Mobile to win the series. That is a problem. And I'll tell you, I don't know. I still like what Chris said when we first walked into the studio today. Hey, they're going to win. They're the better team. I like the confidence, and I believe these guys can go out. I believe they can shake this stuff off. They continue. I mean, how in the world can anybody doubt what this team is capable of doing after what we have sat and witnessed all year?
You
right?
You doubted them last night. If I'm correct and I'm not mistaken, last night you did say before the game the San Jose Sharks will win 4-3.
And if you remember here, and let me tell you right now why I said that. I want to give you some credit for game one. You ought to go bet based on Jose and I. Jose in game one said the score would be 7-2.
I was wrong by and two, and
you
but
were
I
wrong.
Got the goals right.
You got the goals right. and I said 4-3. You said 4-1, but in favor of the Golden Knights last night. Yeah. But here's the deal. Why I said that, and I said it after the game, and it was the same question that I asked, people kind of asked Gallon about, and it was the same question I had asked, Riley Smith, and I also asked Jonathan Marchessault, is 7 goals, you know, is that something that you're a little bit concerned about, only because the San Jose Sharks, they are a professional hockey team. They are not just a professional hockey team, they are a good playoff team that just got done sweeping a fairly decent Anaheim Duck team. This team got humiliated 7-0. Their starting goaltender gives up 5 goals. It was a bad win. And then they come into game two, and there is going to be some pride. The bottom line is, guys, let's face this right now. The Golden Knights were severely outplayed yesterday, especially in the second period. It was almost a debacle. They were on their heels. Chris, you and I were talking about it during the game. This team did not look like they had, and San Jose was on a mission. And that's what I was worried about. That's why I said the score was going to be 4-3. I said, I hope I'm wrong, but usually when you have a beatdown like you had, you really got to be prepared and ready for what we saw yesterday, and it happened.
Here's why I'm not going to panic, and here's why the Golden Knights are going to win this series. It took a great game by San Jose, first of all. It took the absolute worst game we've seen this Golden Knights team play in a game that meant something in over a month. And it took a controversial, questionable at best, goal being overturned for San Jose to win that game. It took a team record in penalties and penalty minutes by San Jose to even get back into that game. They were down 2-0. And then the wheels kind of fell off for the Golden Knights with the penalties. You're not going to see that kind of effort from this team again. I am certain of that.
And Marc-Andre Fleury will not give up that goal. Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing. He made a mistake.
Huge mistake.
On the second goal.
Just hold the puck, man. Hold the... And he knows better.
Yeah.
You can't even question Marc-Andre Fleury.
But, you know, I mean, he did make a mistake, and it led to a goal. But that's the thing. It took a mistake by him. It took what? 9 penalties by Vegas. I think they had 18 penalty minutes. 6 by David Perron in one period. It took... San Jose still has not scored a 5-on-5 goal in the series. And you could take that for what it's worth and say, oh, well... But they're winning in the other facets of the game, and they won that facet last night, 4-on-4, something Vegas has always been very good at. It took the wheels completely coming off for Vegas, and, like I said, a questionable call for the Sharks to win that game. Vegas is the better team. They have the better goalie. They have a better first line. I don't see how San Jose... Look, you could call me a homer. You could say whatever you want. There's a reason why this team has not beaten Vegas in regulation this season. Both wins by the Sharks against Vegas, they came in overtime. One was in, the game, next to last game they played against them, and then last night, double overtime win. Regulation, Vegas is 4-0 against these guys. 5-on-5, Vegas is the better team. Vegas is going to win this series. They are the better team. They have a better goalie. I think their first line is better. The only advantage San Jose has... I don't think Vegas has an answer for Brett Burns.
Brett Burns is the best offensive defenseman in the National Hockey League by far.
He just throws everything at the net.
The other
thing is Joe Pavelski wins a lot of faceoffs. Other than that, I don't really see much advantage for San Jose. You know what? They stole one last night. I shouldn't say that. They deserved to win last night, but they were also very lucky to win. So when you're the better team, but you also need a little bit of luck in order to win, I don't think that's a good sign. And I know San Jose sounded very confident. I think they're a little nervous because you could tell Peter DeBoer in the press conference, he was a little edgy. He was a little salty about things. He wasn't very happy with the way his team played. You could tell he knows they should have lost that game. I think the players in the locker room for San Jose, regardless of what Logan Couture says to you, he knows they should have lost that game.
No, I'm not. I'm not disagreeing with that. They know that they were lucky. I am just saying, when you have a loss like that, where literally victory is snatched from you, where you celebrate the win and then you lose, and then the other team looks at it as new life, they come off the respirator and they win the game, it is a potential turning point. That is my point. But, Mags, you're right. In the first game, 7-0. And after that first game, I got a chance to talk with Jonathan Marchessault. And it was pretty cool, man. It was a nice conversation. They'd had a week off. It was a huge win. And it was my real first opportunity to sit down and spend a little time with this guy. I really liked him. Last night, I'm sure he's kicking himself a little bit for the penalty. But this was him on Thursday night after the game.
John and Marshall doing nightcap. I just want to, you come out this game, obviously you guys came out fine. How big was that after a week layoff to come out and establish your presence like that?
Yeah, it was big. I mean, it was definitely, we were in the same boat for the long break like that. And it was a good game. We know we had to manage the puck well in the first period, and we were able to get the lead and kept going. So I think it was good.
How much did the crowd play a part in this? I mean, I said in all my years of covering sports, it was one of the most magical things I have ever seen.
Oh, it's been like that all year, all playoffs too. I mean, they've been amazing. I mean, we definitely feel their energy out there, and it's the best way to play.
Jonathan, the chemistry of that line with you and Riley and William, I mean, it has really been magical for you. Have you ever played on a line like that in your life that has been so, where you guys connect like that?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, it's, I think when you get a connection like that with a line, I think it's once in a lifetime, and it's fun that we get to know each other and play together as a young age like that, and we'll be able to grow together. And I mean, it's just playing with two amazing players, and I can be more happy for that.
If I was to say it, I know it's a broad question, what makes this team so incredibly special?
I mean, just we're not necessarily satisfied with what we do. So I mean, we just want to work hard and look ahead the next game and be ready for that game. We don't think too far, and I think it's a good mentality to have for a group.
I've asked everyone this question. How valuable is it to have number 29 as your last line of defense?
Well, I mean, he's been the best player all year. I mean, he's the reason why we're here, I think. He keeps us up in every game, and I mean, we want to battle for a guy like that. He's a great guy off the ice, great leader, and a good goaltender. So I mean, definitely every night we want to play for a guy like that.
Final question. Any concern? You win by 7 goals. These guys are professional players, and San Jose, as we know, is a good hockey team. Is it a concern that this is going to be something they take personally and really come out firing on all cylinders on Friday night?
Yeah, they're definitely going to be ready for game 2. I mean, after a 7-0 game like that, I mean, it's definitely hard in playoffs. But I mean, at the end of the night, you win 2-1 or 7-0, it's the same thing. So I think you need to reset and be ready for game 2.
Thank you very much.
Now, Jonathan Marshall, I also got a chance to talk to Riley Smith, one of my favorite players for this team. I think, you know, when you talk about MVPs, there's probably 4 or 5 guys you bring up, but there is no way you talk about a most valuable player of this team and you don't talk about Riley Smith. And this is Riley Smith after game 1.
You know, I think we did a good job at the end of the game, not giving them any momentum to build into next game. So, you know, just rest up and move on to the next one.
But to get 7 goals, you know, how big is that for you guys to come out and, you know, 7 goals the entire first series, and you get 7 in this game? That's got to do a lot moving forward, confidence-wise, offensively.
Yeah, for certain players, it can help them, but I think mainly our team just picking up a win tonight. If we were going to win by 1 goal, it'd be, you know, the same feeling in the dressing room. You know, personally, I think maybe some players can have a little bit more confidence in their game, but I think for the most part, it's just, you know, you build as a team, and playoffs is all just about wins. It's not about personal stuff.
Can't be overstated. Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, 3 shutouts in 5 games. How valuable is it to you? I know it goes on all the time, but to have a guy like him as your last line of defense.
He's incredible. He's been a wall for us all playoffs. He's been a wall for us all season. So, you know, the one thing we have to make sure not to do is to rely on him too much, because you know, he does a great job making saves. He makes everything pretty much look easy, but you know, our defense also do a great job clearing the front of the net and picking up sticks for him too. So you know, if we can lighten the load on him a little bit next game, that'd be great.
Face off to the right of goaltender Martin Jones. Perron wins the draw. Shot, score! Nate Schmidt ties the game.
You gotta make sure you're ready for really anything. You know, in overtime, double overtime, you know, penalties in overtime, whatever it may be, you gotta be able to be ready for it. And like I said, you can't feel bad about what you're doing or what's happening in the game or how things are going, because like I said, they're not gonna wait around for you to get your feet moving. You gotta go out there and do it yourself.
What's the general mood like? Because, I mean, you guys obviously didn't play your best game of the playoffs, but you still almost won the game. So what is the general mood like?
You know, right now it's, guys are upset about how we finished out or how we started the game. I know that I am. We knew they were going to come out and play hard, and we needed to, you know, match or up their intensity. I just think that our guys in this room are going to be excited about the next game, because as bad as it sucks, it really does. You put yourself in a position to win a game, but you battle back, and that's what you want. You want a resilient group. And at the end of the day, I believe we have that in the soccer room. And like I said, game three, can't wait for it. This is why I'm hot.
This is why I'm hot. Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza. A long slap shot from Centennial Hills Hospital. That was Mags talking to Nate Schmidt last night. I said one of the most colorful characters on the Vegas Golden Knights. Not so colorful after a loss, but hey, like you said, man, they want to put this one behind them and get back on the ice Monday night. When we're talking about what's blazing, how about just the entire experience? How about the fans in the white towels at T-Mobile Arena? How about the fact that they've heated up the press box so I'm not freezing my ass off every game?
Yeah, we were talking about that last night.
But I mean, in all seriousness, this is one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. And just this whole experience blazing, maybe not the final score of last night's game, but just in general, everything we've seen, from the magical helmet, the fabricated helmet that comes down in about 60 seconds from the ceiling, to the merchandise, again, to the flags, to the guy that dances, although we didn't see him last night, but the guy that dances up and down the stairs and throws jerseys or T-shirts being on different nights, to the cheerleaders, every single, like, 5 minutes, they switch sections and they line, like, three aisles, and it's just to the nightline, the band that's up there and crank, everything is cool. It's all blazing. And I will tell you what, I think all of us, we've really been blessed too, you know, to sit together during these games. Like, you know, Chris, who really has taken hockey under his wing now this year. I don't know if he loves it as much as soccer, but he has definitely fallen in love with the sport of hockey. And it's really cool to sit next to everyone and listen to people that have become knowledgeable on hockey. And this year, like a crash course for Las Vegas, it's been awesome. One of the guys that's familiar with hockey, has been all over the place, and also, to me, has one of the best websites as far as checking out what this guy does. It's lvsportsbiz.com. 50,000 plus subscribers. Become one of them. You're going to love this stuff. And Alan, we're graced to have him on the show every week, talking about some of the articles and the things he gets into, the business side of sports. One I really liked a couple of days ago, talking about, I liked the article. I don't like the theme behind it, because that's the issue right now, and it is ticket prices to see the Vegas Golden Knights play. You got people that have to drive to LA, and probably people right now that are already heading up to San Jose because they can get a lot cheaper tickets. It's worth the gas, the miles they put on their car to save money to go into T-Mobile Arena. Again, Alan Snell joins us, lvsportsbiz.com right now. You can follow him on Twitter at that exact address, Facebook and Instagram. You can contact lvsportsbiz.com. You can contact the founder and writer, Alan Snell, Snell at lvsportsbiz.com. Alan, I mean, pricing people out of the games, man.
Yeah, you know, Las Vegas, I found it kind of ironic that I was interviewing Kings fans who were complaining to me about how expensive it was to attend a Kings Knights game in Las Vegas, because every time we here in Las Vegas go to California, we talk about how pricey it is there. And I thought there was a little irony in the fact that the Kings fans were complaining to me that it was so expensive just to get into the building. But the fact is, the Golden Knights ticket is a very coveted ticket, and it's pure supply and demand. And this past week, the numbers on the ticket prices on the secondary market were astronomical. At one point, the average secondary ticket price a few days before game two was $671. Wow. Obviously, the price went down as you get closer to game time. But these are big numbers. And, you know, like you mentioned, we see these things in other markets where at Fenway Park, the ticket price is so expensive, so you have a lot of Red Sox fans who travel to Tampa and St. Petersburg to catch the Red Sox play the Rays, because it's cheaper to actually catch a flight and pay for a ticket in St. Petersburg than to actually buy a ticket in your own backyard. So You know, these are very unique, special times, and even fans who are season ticket holders were even complaining about the escalating price. Now, in the playoffs, you will see the tickets go up. That's not unusual, and teams do that. I mean, they raise the price from round to round, anywhere from 15 to 50%. But there were some fans, to me, complaining that it was even beyond 50%. And those are the fans who took the, quote, vow that we've talked about in past shows. So, you know, these are very unique times. And, you know, on the one hand, you know, Bill Foley has invested, along with the Maloof family, they've invested a lot of dollars to launch this franchise. And on the other hand, I guess, you know, you can argue they deserve to, you know, get to generate revenues, including on the ticket side, especially in this very unique, unprecedented, historic season they've had.
No question about it. Hey, it's all in economic terms, Alan. It's maximizing their utilities, and right now the price ceiling is literally and figuratively through the roof. We are talking to Alan Snell. He is the founder and writer for LVSportsBiz.com. Alan, I'll tell you what, man. You know, it is what it is, and I've been talking to more and more people about it because it is a Vegas show. It has become a production. You've alluded to it, you know, from the helmet coming down to everything we're seeing, and people coming to Vegas now scratch their heads because I have friends that came to Vegas like, God, we really want to see Cirque du Soleil, but we hear that, you know, that Mystere is a lot less expensive and still a really good show. I'm like, well, yeah, it really is. I mean, it's probably one of the more economically feasible Cirque shows. My point is Cirque du Soleil is about half, maybe less than half of a ticket to go see the Golden Knights game. So now it's debating on, do I go see the Golden Knights or do I see the top Vegas show in Cirque du Soleil? It's wild that it's gotten to that, but that's where we're at, right, Alan?
Absolutely. On Thursday, the president of the team, Kerry Buchholz, was among several team representatives of organizations from around Las Vegas attending a really interesting luncheon put on by the Latin Chamber of Commerce at Nevada State College. And Buchholz came out explicitly and said that this is not happening by accident. It's by design. And Buchholz told the luncheon crowd that we sat down with Bill Foley and we said for this hockey product to succeed in the desert, we need to obviously have a competitive team, but also have an entertainment product that meets the standards of what we call the entertainment capital of the world. So the all the trimmings that you described, everything from the giant 20-foot-tall helmet that descends to the ice to the show acts at intermission, the high-powered music system, that is not by accident. I mean, that was specifically an investment by Bill Foley, by the Maloofs, in putting together this product, Brian.
Hey, you know, Vegas is very famous for reinventing itself, and it seems like every Vegas Golden Knights game, the marketing department reinvents themselves with something fabulous and new, and it's been really cool. He is Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. Become one of the 50,000-plus subscribers. It's good stuff, man. Alan, appreciate you, man. Look forward to what we're going to be talking about next week.
Absolutely. Have a great week, guys.
You do the same. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, we'll have Jim Gemma on board for the 51s report. And hopefully, we're going to get to fact this, where we're going to talk a little NFL draft. We have not gotten to that yet. And I, being the fact that we've got some Jets fans in studio, obviously, we've got to talk about the Jets. And, hey, the Lions were up there, too. And I've got some interesting stuff for you on them on the other side. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, the flagship station of the Vegas Golden Knights. Our sister station, 920 The Game, is the flagship station for the Las Vegas 51s. And on board with us right now, Jim Gemma, the Director of Media Operations, and one of our favorite people to have on the show, a guy I love seeing down at the 51s games, which I go to an awful lot of because I have a great time at Cashman. You should too. Jimmy, what's up, my friend?
Brian, thanks for having me on today.
Oh, absolutely. I know the 51s have been out of town for a little bit, but they're coming back in for a short road trip. They're going to be playing a team that I love the minor league team's names, and the Sacramento River Cats. They are the AAA affiliate of the San Francisco Giants. They will be at Cashman Field starting tomorrow night, and they'll be here through Thursday, right?
Yeah, the Sacramento River Cats are actually in their fourth season now as the San Francisco Giants AAA team. Yeah, Monday through Thursday, we're kind of in a 2-3 week period where we're in for four, out for five, in for four. Monday through Thursday against Sacramento. Now, Tuesday, May 1st is our 15th annual school day game at 10:35 a.m. with the Clark County School District. But the other days will be at 7:05.
Yeah, normal times for them, and that is this Tuesday. You do have a matinee game, which is very rare, so kind of cool to get out there for the matinee. I'm going to see if I can play hooky from my other real gig and get out there myself, because I absolutely love coming to the ballpark. It is the last season. You'll get to see the Las Vegas 51s in Old Town Town Las Vegas as they head up to Summerlin next year at their brand-new ballpark. So definitely check it out. It is part of history. Cashman is a great place to view a game. It's an intimate environment, and I really like it. And they do a great job of maintaining the field, which is really cool too, Jimmy. Some of the great promotions coming up, my friend.
Well, right now they have their challenges keeping the field where it is. There's about eight guys right now working on the field, converting it back to a baseball field. So the head groundskeeper for the LVCVA, Colin Dobler, does a great job. So to say they have their hands full is an understatement for this season. With that being said, yes, our tickets are available on LV51, Ticketmaster.com. The 51s have had a great road trip. They're 4-0 in Albuquerque. They're going to try to sweep today, which is not always easy in New Mexico. That series concludes at 11 a.m. today. But, yeah, we always encourage everyone to check out our website at lv51.com.
Yeah, absolutely, and they got off to a slow start. But, yeah, nice to see put them a little winning streak together. And the big club got off to a blazing start, as we all know, this year. So pretty cool. Get down there and check them out. I've always said it's what I love about it is, you know, you're watching the future of Major League Baseball, and sometimes you're watching the end of careers of guys. And what's really cool is throughout the season you get to see guys rehabbing that come down. I still think of a couple years ago, a guy that I've always loved his game when Angel Pagan was down here playing for this very, very same team we're seeing in town right now. And that's the kind of opportunity you get at Cashman to see the big leaguers down here or on their way heading up. Jimmy, as the season rolls on, again, some of the promotions as far as jersey giveaways, hat giveaways, what are some days people right now might want to reserve some tickets to?
Yeah, I know you mentioned that a couple minutes ago. The main one, the next one coming up, Saturday, May 12th, we'll start our jersey night. Ahmed Rosario, 51's replica jersey night, is always a good one. That should be a very popular item. Over the Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, May 26th, will be our second. It'll be 51's camouflage baseball cap night. All these promotions are on our website. We have a lot of them. So obviously every Thursday is Budweiser Dollar Beer Night. But once we get into the summers, the Saturday is going to be the T-shirt giveaways. Later in the year, there'll be a Mets-style jersey, a 51's Mets-style jersey in July because it's our last year with the Mets as a AAA affiliate. So, yeah, and then every Friday, this is our third season of doing this, we'll be shooting fireworks off.
Well, you know how I feel about the fireworks, man. I say they rival Disney's. I've been saying it for 4 years now, man. If you have not been down to Cashman, every Friday that they have a home game is like the 4th of July. It's really, really cool. He's Jim Gemma, Director of Media Relations for the Las Vegas 51s. Jimmy, always appreciate you joining the show, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, obviously, we'll always have our niche here in the city. You know, talk about major league prices. Our low-end ticket is $12, so, you know, affordable. Family fun. It sounds corny, but it works for minor league baseball.
Hey, Jim, it's Jose here. I just have one question for you. I did notice on the web the other day that the 51s do have a thing right now with the fans trying to come up with a new name since you guys are going to have a new name next year in summer. Can you talk a little bit about that real quick?
Yeah, it started on April 16th. It's going all the way to tomorrow, a two-week period. We've had, which is a good thing, it's better than having no suggestions. We've had a ton of suggestions. It's a long and involved process with MLB licensing. When it's all said and done, Brandioso is a rebranding company. They've done stuff with the minor league baseball team. So probably by November, we'll have a new team name, logo, uniform look. But we've heard everything from the Red Rocks to the Roundabouts to the Scorpions to the... of course, you're always going to hear the Rat Pack and the Mobsters, of course. But we appreciate everybody's suggestions.
Nice.
We've been 18 years with the Stars, 18 years with the 51s. We kind of have a running line here, I guess we're going to change our name every 18 years. But when you're going into a new ballpark and you're going to have a brand new Major League affiliate, it's a perfect time to rebrand. It's funny, when the 51's name first came out, everybody there was an upheaval over it. Now some people want it to stay. So it's kind of cool how over time people do get to a name. We're definitely not going to be the Golden Knights. That part I do know.
I like the passion. Jim Jemma, Director of Media Operations. Appreciate you, my friend.
Take care. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. All right.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it is a fact that this past Thursday through yesterday was the 2018 NFL Draft. And this is something that if you're a longstanding, or should I say still standing, Detroit Lions fan, you don't get too excited for. Let me tell you why, guys. I told you I'd have a little something special for you. Check this out, and I'm just going to go back a couple decades. I'm not going to go back through history, but I want to remind you real quickly, the Detroit Lions have won one playoff game in the Super Bowl era. Put that in perspective. We are talking the early 60s when Green Bay Packers played in the very first Super Bowl. The Detroit Lions have never even sniffed a Super Bowl. They've won one playoff game. It was in 1991, and they have been blanked ever since. So that is pretty amazing. Checked out some of their draft picks. So let's go back. Let's start in 1997 when they decided to have a little run on defensive backs. I'm going to tell you who the Lions picked and who went right after them. How about Brian Westbrook, a cornerback from the University of Texas? He was the fifth pick overall in the NFL draft. You know who was picked right after him? The Seattle Seahawks picked up a guy named Walter Jones from Florida State as a sixth pick. He's in the Hall of Fame, just so you know. Brian Westbrook, you can probably find him on Wikipedia. I'm sure you can find out something a little about him. How about a year later, 1998, they decided to draft Terry Fair, another defensive back, cornerback, out of the University of Tennessee. You know who went right after Terry Fair with the 20th pick in the draft? Randy Moss went to the Minnesota Vikings out of Marshall with the 21st pick in the draft. He's not in the Hall of Fame yet, but he does get his gold jacket this coming summer. And in 1999, they picked up a guy named Chris Claiborne with the 9th pick, a linebacker out of USC, who the 10th pick was a guy by the name of, who was their 10th pick that year? I forgot. It wasn't somebody super special, but just a guy that went to the Baltimore Ravens, if I'm not mistaken, a Pro Bowler that went to the Baltimore Ravens for a couple years. And his name was Chris McAllister, who also got himself a Super Bowl ring. After Chris McAllister? Dante Culpepper went after Chris McAllister and had three straight Pro Bowl years. You know what's even more ironic? Chris Claiborne, who we drafted with that pick, 2 years later was a Minnesota Viking. How do you like that? And then how about this? In 2003, they decided to go for a run on wide receivers, and they drafted out of Michigan State Charles Rogers. Charles Rogers, in his career, had 36 catches in his 15-game career. You know who got picked after Charles Rogers? Andre Johnson went to the Houston Texans. In his career, he had 1,062 catches, and people say he might get a gold jacket one day, too. Wow, check that out. And how about in 2005 when they decided to take with the 10th overall pick, Mike Williams? Mike Williams did have 127 catches in his 5 NFL seasons. Right after Mike Williams, Megs, this is going to make you sick, even though you're not a Lions fan. The 11th pick, DeMarcus Ware to the Dallas Cowboys. Oh. The 8th on the all-time sacks list with 138.5 and counting. In 2007, they did get it right. They took Calvin Johnson, who never won a playoff game and retired like Barry Sanders before his time because he got tired of being a Detroit Lion. So, guys, you know what the thing is? You would think with all those draft picks, the Detroit Lions would have more than one playoff pick if they were any good at picking in the draft, right?
Well, I mean, that's pretty bad stuff.
And how sickening is that when you hear how bad they picked?
We could go through the Jets as well. I mean,
we're pretty bad too. Yeah,
you know, and like I told you the other night, they missed Brett Favre by one pick. They wanted to trade ahead of Atlanta to take Brett Favre. They didn't do it. Atlanta took Brett Favre. I think it was like pick 32 or something like that. With pick 33, the Jets took cornerback Louisville Browning Nagel. Yeah. Great, great pick there for the Jets. You know what? It's so funny you talk about that because 2 years ago, to this day, I wrote this post on Facebook. Ah! The Jets make me so mad. There are only two draft picks in their history I have hated, Kyle Brady and Geno Smith. And this hacking expletive pick has surpassed both of those on a volcanic level. Lava came out of my ears, nose, and mouth. I cannot believe how stupid this franchise is year after year after year. That's it. I have accepted it. They will never, ever, ever win a Super Bowl in my lifetime. They are just so in over their heads year after year. What a dumb expletive franchise reaching on a guy who shouldn't even be in the league. That was Christian Hackenberg. I don't know how many snaps that guy has taken in the NFL in the 2 years since he was drafted. Zero. Bryce Petty is getting more snaps than Christian Hackenberg. Both of them going to be out of a job this upcoming offseason. But
you don't think Bryce Petty will go somewhere? I mean, Bryce Petty, I think, still has some upside to him. He never really got his shot, though.
Nah, I don't think he's a good quarterback. He, you know what? He played in the gimmick offense at Baylor. He was a guy who put up big numbers in college, but gimmick offense, no defense in the Big 12. He's not a good quarterback.
So he won't land anywhere, in your opinion?
Someone may take him on a flyer to see if maybe, you know, I mean, there's a lot of bad backup quarterbacks in the NFL.
Well, forget about the bad backups, guys. We're running out of time, and I want to know about your number one pick. You got Sam Darnold. I told you my opinion on this guy. You know what? I think Sam Darnold, out of all the quarterbacks, might have the most natural gifts and the best tools.
I think he's got the best upside.
Yes. The problem is, he made so many poor decisions in big games over the course of his body of work at USC. I said he is not ready. I wasn't the first person to say it. Kirk Herbstreit was screaming, this guy is not ready to go, and yet nobody listened, and the Jets again picked this guy. Are we looking at butt fumble part two, another USC Jets quarterback that put it this way. You know, we joke about Mark Sanchez, but like you said, he had a mildly successful career considering what he did early on. You'd be happy if I told you right now, look into a crystal ball, Sam Darnold's going to take you to two AFC championships games. You guys would like that.
I'd be happy with that.
What do you think?
I think it's a pick that certainly has the potential to miss, but I also think they made the safe pick. Because there's a lot of, regardless of what Kirk Herbstreit said, there's a lot of people who, like Mike Mayock, thinks he's the best quarterback in the draft. Troy Aikman said on NFL Network he really liked him if he can cut down on the turnovers. Look, fumbles are things you can work on. It's a mechanical thing. He runs with the ball outside the box. You know, he holds it out there like a loaf of bread. You know, he's not tucking it when he goes. So I think that's something they can work on. Interceptions, those scare me. Because that, to me, is a guy who believes too much in his ability. A guy who...
He's a gunslinger.
Yeah.
But he's not Brett Favre.
If we can see the guy that we saw 2 years ago, not the guy that we saw this past year in Sam Darnold, then I can say maybe this could be the quarterback of the future. But if we have the guy that we had last year at USC, I'm from Southern California, so I'm originally a USC fan. And honestly, I'm tired that we keep drafting these quarterbacks. I mean, Mark Sanchez was good.
Why don't you guys draft a quarterback from an East Coast school that's used to playing in cold weather?
You keep drafting hot guys. It's not good.
They did that with Hackenberg, and he can't even get on the field. They did that with Geno Smith, and he's garbage too.
You know, and believe me, I know the knocks on Josh Allen. I mean, the guy barely played like crap against Power 5 conference teams, like one touchdown and 8 interceptions.
I think he's going to be all right.
But he has, you know, I mean, Buffalo, he may be a great fit there because this guy is used to playing in Wyoming. You want to talk about some playing in snow up to your eyeballs. This guy's going to be good there. And I thought he might have been a better fit for the Jets based on where he played his collegiate ball.
And his coach, Craig Bohl, knows a thing or two about pretty good NFL quarterbacks.
Because
he was the guy who coached and recruited Carson Wentz.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, listen, we're out of time. I want to remind you, first of all, I want to thank everyone on the show. Jose Magnum, of course, as always, guys, appreciate it. Alan Snell for coming on. Of course, Jimmy Gemma. All the guys we interviewed, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, we got to do Pierre Belmar as well. And, of course, Mag's got Nate Schmidt. We're out of time. This is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday, 8 to 9 a.m. Check us out. We'll be back on Facebook Live, maybe at a 51s game.
Maybe.
Definitely Friday night at Game 5 at T-Mobile Arena. Out of Line right here. You be with us. We'll be back. We'll see you then. Bye.
See you.
Thank you for your understanding. And I want to thank the crowd tonight. The people of Las Vegas who were here.